This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Host the Twins.
Ken Miller, Trent Condon. They are Miller and Condon on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome in. It's a Tuesday on the Miller and Condon radio program. Glad you're with us as we talk sports with you for the next couple of hours. I'll say the Cubs fell last night, Trent Condon. That was ugly. Six errors. We'll get into that coming up in the first segment. I'm certain of that. Here's the program lineup today. We are going to speak with Chris Level in about 20 minutes or thereabouts. Chris Level is the radio analyst for Texas Tech, both football and men's basketball. He's Eric Heft. He's been on the program essentially, maybe both games before the Iowa State-Texas Tech basketball this year. He previews Iowa State-Texas Tech football with us, and we're grateful that he's going to find a few minutes because I'm guessing he's had a lot of requests to do some radio hits from around the country. Is Texas Tech one of four teams that will make their way to Minneapolis this weekend? Chris Level coming up here in about 20 minutes. We're going to talk some hockey. Joe O'Donnell, the KXNO's hockey team, winding down their regular season. We'll get an update playoff-wise from Joe O'Donnell and what remains, what work needs to be done. Still remains as the Wild still have a couple of weeks left in their regular season. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Trent and I will take our first look at the freshly released NFL win totals that came out over the weekend. We'll take a look at the local teams, where the local teams are being projected. If you're in the desert at one of the CG Technology properties, you could actually bet these as of Sunday. We'll take a look at some of those, some of the marquee teams as well. We'll do that at 11. And Zuba Mahente will slide on in here at 11:20. He is hosting the NIT coverage tonight on ESPN, Wichita State, Lipscomb early, and then a Big 12 tilt TCU, and maybe Jamie Dixon's final opportunity to coach that team as he's being rumored at UCLA. And Texas, of course, with Shaka Smart. So Texas, TCU, two teams we're very familiar tonight. Will you watch?
I think I will.
Yeah. Royals, Twins, though.
That's number one.
Okay.
It'll be a flip back and forth. That'll in between commercials, that's when I'll get over there. And if it's compelling and tight, I'll stay there.
So you haven't decided if you're going to actually dabble at the game, betting wise?
Well, I will. I don't know what direction I'm heading right now, but yeah, I will. It's basketball.
It is indeed, and there's only, there's 6 games left, if you include the 3 NITs and the 3 we'll see this
weekend. Forget about the CBI and the CIT.
Well, I did forget it last night. I completely forgot all about it.
DePaul, South Florida? I mean, your tickets.
Was it compelling?
I didn't get there. I couldn't pull the trigger on that one.
Well, I know you pulled,
not that big of a problem.
Well, you do, because you're betting women's basketball, but you were on the right side last night. You said this early in the show yesterday. The number was 14.5. You said, but that's not a good number.
No.
Baylor's going to crush Iowa is essentially what you said, and you were right. What, they win by 30?
Yeah.
Or thereabouts. Look, I watched maybe 5 minutes of actual game time.
Sure.
I couldn't get into it. I don't know any of the players, right?
And right.
It wasn't much of a game competitively. Baylor just looked as they were much better. The takeaway from it, and it came after the game, was watching Rob Howe's video that, tens of thousands of people have now watched the press conference following the game. And you just played the soundbite from Megan Gustafson, who was very emotional after the game. Why wouldn't she? But, thank you to Iowa for choosing me. I mean, talk about a humble individual. That was, to me, striking, Trent. Thank you. Correct me if I'm wrong, the most decorated women's basketball player ever to set foot in Iowa City, certainly to wear the Hawkeye uniform, right?
Yes, All-American. ESPN.com had her as the National Player of the Year.
Is there a big gap between the first and the second best?
I would go back to Tony Foster, who was the best player on the team that went to the Final Four, the 93 team that had the longest run before this year. That would be the other one, but I don't even remember. I don't think she was a first-team All-American. best player in a really good team. So maybe, but in terms of accomplishment in that, and Iowa, and I was shocked when I heard this, and I don't have it accredited. I haven't researched it myself, but somebody told me this. I think it was over the weekend that Iowa, men's or women's, had never had a first-team All-American, AP first-team All-American. And I was thinking, Ronnie Lester, well, you think of that year, his senior year, that they went to the Final Four. He was hurt. He missed a big portion that season, so he probably wasn't first-team All-American. B.J. Armstrong, never. Roy Marble, never. E.C. Earl, not first-team. You go through the greats and then going back in the day, and I don't know when the AP poll began. You get into, you know, downtown Freddie Brown and J.J. and those kind of guys. I don't know how far back it goes, but regardless, and that's almost shocking, right?
That's saying something, Trent. That's saying something. And look, Baylor was just...
They're just a lot better.
They're just a lot better. I mean,
yeah, there's not a whole lot of breakdown here. There's not... You know, if I would just...
So did you stay with it till the end?
I did,
You really did? Good for you.
Did my podcast with the guys at Hawkeye Heaven last night. We did it right afterwards. So we're there watching the game and stuck it out all the way to the end. Baylor is incredible. I mean, it's not just that they have a 6'7 girl inside who... She's huge. I mean, 6'7 and blocking shots. But then they got another 6'4 girl in there, too, who, in fact, was the better player last night for big portions of that game. It wasn't a game where, you know, if Iowa just could have hit a couple more shots or if they could have got the ball inside to Gustafson and maybe got Brown in foul trouble, well, then they just throw another 6'4 girl at her and it's fine. It's just there wasn't a realistic path for Iowa to even be in that game in the fourth quarter. It just wasn't. They're a lot better.
And they weren't. So Baylor moves on and Iowa ends the run.
And here's that clip again from Megan Gustafson for people that missed it. It is... It's just a...
You just listen to it. It comes through your radio, Trent.
Yeah.
You know, God has just blessed me with an amazing ability to play basketball, and I'm so, so blessed and thankful that University of Iowa chose me and I chose them to play for them.
Jeez. It's great. It got me last night.
Yeah, no, it's getting me right now.
I was cutting up
That's
the
amazing.
Audio today. It got me, too. It's...
Thankful that Iowa chose me, I'll say.
Yes.
I think it probably goes both ways.
I think Lisa Bluter would like to take three or four Mega Gustafsons every year.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, so let's stay on the basketball, then we'll get into the baseball, because the Cubs were just a complete disaster in the field last night, and some of their big names just kicking the ball around. But that in a second. Taylor Horton Tucker has, you know, he put out that statement. It sure seems like the door is closed. You know, he's moved on from one chapter. As many people have said, when was the last time you read a book? But you went, and if you know, when you go back and you actually read the chapter you just finished, when you pick up the book again, you don't. That chapter's over and you go forward in the book, not backwards in the book. I know he's got the opportunity to come back. He can go through the process. He can put himself in the, if he gets invited to the combine, he can actually hire an agent, as long as the agent doesn't, there's no financial compensation, coming to Horton Tucker or any family member. If he's not drafted, he can return to college. Trent, here's the thing with Taylor Horton Tucker. I don't think he's an NBA player, but let me say this. Let me caveat this. He's 18 years old.
Yes.
And he'll be 18 years old when the NBA season starts in late October. I mean, he is a young, young kid still. He's a kid. He's 18 years old. And if he's, you know, on mocks and he gets the, you're going to be late in the first round, you absolutely go. They are going to have to pay Taylor Horton Tucker to develop. Get paid. He's not going to play in the NBA next year, but he's going to play somewhere and he's going to collect that first round, if he is, guaranteed money in the
Absolutely.
First round. You go every single day. Is he ready now? Of course not. He's 18. He's not plateaued.
And if you watched him just strictly as a basketball player, and you would say, boy, first round? What?
But flashes, though.
There are those flashes. He is, though he's 6'4", 6'5", he's got the wingspan to go along with it. He has, I think, a shot that can develop very well. He has athleticism.
Because some nights, Trent, he's had it going on. You go back to Kansas City. What game was it? The K-State game? One of the games late in the season, he just couldn't miss from three.
And a player like this, and now you go from a young kid, still a lot of developmental phase to his game, retooling his body, getting stronger, and maybe losing a little bit of the extra that is there, those kind of things. This is now his full-time job. You're not going to econ class.
Right.
You don't have to go to a wellness program, nothing like that. What you have to do is you play basketball, and you're getting up your 300, 400, 500 shots a day, and you're doing it with a guy that is dedicated to that. Watch an NBA game and look back behind the bench, not just the assistant coaches that you see, but back on the other side of things, and you will see a multitude of coaches. And those are guys that are strictly working on whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And it might be that jump shot, or it might be rebounding, or it might be the defensive assistant. Whatever it is, that is now his career. That is his job. And with all the upside that is there, somebody's going to take a chance. And when he gets that assurance, and I'm sure he will from somebody late in the first round.
That if you're there at 26 or 24 or whatever,
you're
a team drafting late in the first round, if they give him that wink and the nod and the promise. Mm-hmm. But what if they don't? So what if he does fall to the second round, and we think he's going to get drafted based on the potential in itself. Mm-hmm. But if you are a second rounder, what do you go? Where do you do there? Are you better developing, you know, not getting the big money that he would as a first, as a guaranteer?
Right.
Again, I guess it comes right back to how much do you like school?
Yeah. Now, guys, that
he's not going to graduate. I don't think he's going to. If he comes back, he's coming back for 1 year.
You know, P.J. Washington was one of those guys that we saw dominate with Kentucky.
Perfect example.
He was a fringy late first, maybe second round pick. No assurances.
Yep.
Came back.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's going in the top 15,
yes,
right?
Yes, he is.
Maybe top 10.
Right.
And so there's that side. But there's the other side, the guys that come back and they don't develop, or they don't do the parts of their game that the NBA said, you need to work on this, and it doesn't come around. And now you're a year older. And some of that upside that you once thought you had isn't quite there. And people can pick nits about your game.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you look at efficiency numbers offensively, Taylor Horton Tucker is a bit of a chucker. I mean, not efficiency field goal percentage is down. He's that kind of player. And because of that, well, is this a guy that we think we can develop? Is he just a guy that's going to get up shots and that's all he can do? That's what happens also on the other side of it for coming back. There's two sides to every coin. I think he's going to get that assurance, though. I don't think he comes back regardless.
I think he's as good as gone. I think so, too. And I think the press release, when I saw it, there wasn't really a lot of, you know, can you interpret it this way? He closed a chapter. He's on to the next chapter is what he said. I'm not making this up. That's what he said.
Much different than what we saw a year ago with Lindell Wiggins.
Yes, there was some ambiguity there.
Mm-hmm.
There's not here.
No.
So Lard's gone.
Yes.
Horton Tucker, we think, is probably going to be gone. Lindell Wiggins came back for one more year so he could be gone. Halliburton's not going anywhere.
Right.
Jacobson, Condit, Halliburton. Shayok and Talley have graduated. Solomon Weiler-Babb is gone. Solomon Young comes back. All of a sudden, this team that we thought had the, you know, yeah, they're going to lose some guys. And their leading scorer, Mariel Shayok, one of the better players in all Big 12 conference, first team this year. Yeah, you got to replace him. All of a sudden now, Trent, this is a team that's, is it in transition?
Terrence Lewis, is he coming back?
Well, that's another one. I don't think so, but maybe does this
open the door for him?
I'm wondering, right?
Yeah.
Because it sure looked like, I mean, he was as good as gone.
And the funny thing is now the way that they're currently constructed, and you look at the recruiting class coming in, they had the kid from Colorado State, Prentice
Nixon,
who sat out,
mm-hmm.
combo guard. But the construction of this team is a team that should probably be playing two bigs together.
Yeah. Well, they got two. I mean, there's two left. They can play Condit and Jacobson, and I hope they do.
And then you throw a healthy Solomon Young back in there.
Uh-huh.
That's three bigs that you can
Nixon
rotate
on the floor. Do you keep Wiggington? Halliburton's got to play for sure.
Yes, yeah. And he'll be, I mean, we saw him play, 36 minutes a game this season. Now he's probably going to play 40.
Yeah, he might.
He'll be out there all the time. It's interesting, the construction.
Who are we missing anybody? Because I don't know enough about the incoming recruiting class.
You know, they get the 6'9 kid from Florida, I know was a top 100 player.
Mm-hmm.
He's somebody I think.
And Griffin didn't play a ton this year.
He didn't. That's a good name because, remember, there was a lot of excitement about him and about what he was going to be.
Halliburton, of the four, was the least highly thought of, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it was totally. Horton Tucker, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
He was right on the top of that class. I was like, you know, go back. But, yeah, Griffin's one of those guys. So they got some.
And the recruiting class, the guard coming in, Trey Jackson, 24/7 has him ranked in the 200s.
Okay.
So we're not talking about a guy, at least on the surface, you'd think be an impact
guy. Who did they beat
guy.
For him, do you know?
Let me click on his profile. South Carolina kid, Buffalo, Coastal Carolina, Florida Gulf Coach, and Georgia Southern.
So Power 5 schools not existent.
Not part of that one. The other kid, though, and a guy that also isn't ranked very highly by 24/7, but remember the Leach kid? He was the one that had some big-time offers when he was like a freshman and sophomore and then had a couple of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we're talking the Kentuckys of the world were interested in this kid early. Had the injuries. Those fell off the table, and then Iowa State swooped in and was able to get him. So that's one to keep
an eye on. Pedigree there, though.
Yes, yeah. Mercedes Leach is the kid's name. So, you know, next time we get Alex Halstead out,
which is hopefully tomorrow,
we'll try to dig a little bit deeper into this recruiting class, because we really haven't talked about this three-man recruiting class much.
No, and I have seen Travis Hines, and the transfer portal is open, and it's busy.
Oh, yes.
And it's going to get busier after this coming week. So there's going to be some opportunities and some one-and-doners and some guys just looking to get to a new spot. So and we know Iowa State's certainly willing to take those guys. All right, a couple minutes on baseball from yesterday, Trent. And we got to talk about the Cubs, because they are the team here, whether we want to or not. It was a comedy of errors. It was just, I mean, Javier Baez, really bad defensively last night. Anthony Rizzo, two errors on one play.
Nice.
I mean, you never see that. Kicked the ball. He looked at second base. Well, he took his eye off the ball is what he did. Fumbled it, picked it up, tried to make an underhand toss, sideways toss. Tossed it almost into the front row. So there's another error there. Baez with a couple. Bryant with a fielding error. There was one more I'm missing. Zagunas.
Well, there was six of them.
Yeah, Zagunas. So that would be the six. And then there was balls dropping between players. Javier Baez running with his back to the infield, calling off the left fielder. I mean, Zagunas got to take charge there, man. That's his ball. And I get that Javi Baez loves to see himself on SportsCenter. We see him a million times, and he's got this in his game. But that one got away, and that was a big, big. Look, I get it. It maybe sounds like I'm overreacting. It's game four, right?
There's
158 of them to go.
Slow down.
You got to slow your roll a little bit. But don't forget what was said. Joe Maddon's got to get off to a good start this year.
Absolutely.
They didn't extend Joe Maddon. Are they tight? I don't know. They like their guy. This is a veteran now team, guys that have been there a long time and played for Joe Maddon. They don't want to see the guy that took him to the promised land be shown the door, and apparently that's out there.
We liked everything that we heard from this team as a whole throughout the spring. Most teams say the right thing, but I bought in. Yeah. I was really believing in what they said and what they were talking about, that this was a team that figured it out.
Yeah.
Last year, what was it, the 41-run losses that they had, the 1-0 games
they got shut out or 1-run losses.
They were going to bounce back from that. The offense was going to come together.
Bryant was hurt.
I bought in. But I think you might be onto something here, the tightness of this team, because six errors in a game. The bullpen looks terrible again.
You Darvish stunk?
You believed in that one. That was one that I didn't want to go on that hill.
I was on the Tyler Chatwood bandwagon, and that was, I mean, I'm completely off that.
Don't we have a caller?
Well, Scott Casby, are you job shadowing me today? What are you doing?
I am, actually, and I moved your car, had it washed.
Did you?
Look at that.
Yeah.
Very nice. Did you fill it up?
As well. With the price of gas, no, but, you know, there's always tomorrow. You're right. It is only game four,
right?
And in listening to you and your little pal here, Trent, the thing with the Cubs is everybody's going to have a bad game.
And yeah, they've had a bad start.
But boy, look at the preseason.
And that's what our optimism was based on, for crying. Yeah, that was bad last night.
What about Milwaukee, though? I mean, you want to focus?
Fantastic. Cardinals, likewise. They had a big win yesterday.
A huge win yesterday.
I'm telling you, this division's going
to
be...
But please lay off my Cubbies. Would you please? You got to remember, it took us 108 years to get back to... So we don't have to talk about goats and some guy in the outfield interrupting a ball. Who did he interrupt from catching that ball? Do you remember?
Yeah, Alex Gonzalez.
There you go.
Shortstop.
Thank you.
Well, he's the one that made the error.
It was Lou, right. Gonzalez with the error. Yeah. Lou in the upfield. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Bartman. Yeah. Yep. Great Bartman. I saw him at the airport once.
You really did?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to go up and say, you know what, it's going to be okay. Just move.
Yeah, leave him alone.
Keep moving. Yep. Keep moving.
He doesn't want to be bothered.
Nobody wants to be bothered at an airport.
No.
You wouldn't even talk to me at the airport.
I remember that. Yeah. But I didn't recognize you. You're growing your beard. So what are you doing now that you don't have wrestling? I know you do, but you don't have your show on Saturday morning.
Yeah, just got back from doing the NCAAs. Had a great time there.
Should they move those? calendar-wise?
Yeah, it should be a one-semester sport. Should be from Jan 1 for primary. In other words, you can have some tournaments in November, December, if you wish, and that's how you get your teams warmed up. But I think the best thing we can do for college sports, and in particular college wrestling, is move it from Jan 1 until after basketball.
You have to.
I mean, it's
lost.
It's always going to be a shadow.
There's no question.
And having been living in your shadow all these years, I understand. Nothing can grow. Look at Trent Condon. He's still struggling.
Yeah, but he's in the door, and I'm not going to be here for five more years, and it's going to be his show.
This is. Are you recording any of this? Because
no, we're on. We're in commercial.
Yeah, this commercial break. Yeah, it's just us going back and forth. You didn't know that.
Chris Leavell coming up next. He's the radio analyst for Texas Tech. Grateful to get Chris. He's going to join us when we come back. We're going to talk some hockey with Joe O'Donnell from the Iowa Wild. Zuba Mahente in hour number two. It's Miller and Condon. We're on Des Moines Sports Station 1460.org.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
KXNO in your pocket with iHeartRadio on your smartphone. This is Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back. As promised, we're going to talk some Texas Tech, Michigan State. We're down to four, one Big 12 team remaining. They're Texas Tech. We've had Chris Leavell on throughout the regular season. When Texas Tech gets set to collide with Iowa State in both football and basketball, we're grateful that he found some time for us in what must be a very busy week. Chris, the analyst for men's basketball and football, he's Eric Heft, essentially, and he joins us. Chris, thanks for coming on. How are you, Chris Leavell? What was that like following the conclusion of the Gonzaga game? Take us into the locker room for a second.
Well, it's just surreal. I think that... you know, and I think that the interesting thing about this is while they're very excited, this is a head coach that expected to be here. And he keeps reminding everybody, you know, we're not supposed to be here. Like, you know, because they keep being picked against and are the underdog or whatever. But, you know, it's just been a great run. And really, they've controlled most of these games. That's the surprising part is there's been no upset. There's been nothing fluky about them getting to Minneapolis here, and they've knocked off a one seed, a two seed, a six seed, and haven't needed a last second shot. The drama though in Anaheim at the end of the Gonzaga game was that there was some iconic stuff there. The block by Tariq Owen,
unbelievable.
It is, and then the shots by Morrow at the end of the game, the two threes under 4 minutes. I mean, Matt Mooney's ability to get to the rim, and then Jarrett Culver has just been so consistent throughout this whole tournament. But it's just, this is a, sports can be really cruel for those of us that follow it, you know, and it you hurt when you lose, or man, your teams are struggling. But boy, they can be awfully fun too, and rewarding. And right now, this is very pure, and a lot of good stories with these kids and the head coach that just kind of buying in. It's a lot of fun right now.
Chris, take us to Anaheim. The three other teams that were there had been there the year previous, though in a different arena, playing in the L.A. area for the West Regional semifinals and final with Michigan Gonzaga there beforehand. Fan base-wise, how well did Texas Tech travel to that in comparison? And Texas Tech's not known as a basketball school, obviously their first ever Final Four here. How many people are going to be making that long drive up I-35 to Minneapolis or trying to fly into Minneapolis here for the weekend?
Yeah, you know, I think in Anaheim, they didn't have that many there. I mean, they sold all their allotments for the Thursday night game versus Michigan. Obviously, when you have all four schools represented in that doubleheader that night, you know, everybody's got, you know, didn't have that many tickets. But I think Saturday, you know, they probably had around 4,000 folks there, and Gonzaga had more, but the Tech fans certainly much louder in that game toward the end. And that's been a theme with this team all season long. You know, we went to Austin. We went to Waco. We went to Fort Worth. We went to the Garden and played Duke. I mean, there's several thousand people in these venues in road games, and that's what Coach Beard has really tapped into, kind of a, you know, I don't want to say sleeping giant or anything, but he's really tapped into this fan base. It's been starved in many ways. And They are supporting this basketball program, and I expect there's probably a little bit of a benefit when you're the very first team the weekend of the Elite Eight that punches your ticket to the Final Four, because you get a head start on everybody as far as planning and all that. But the Tech fan base is treating this like, okay, once in a lifetime opportunity. Don't care what it costs. Get me in the building. and how Beards might operate. We're sitting there after the team meal on Saturday after we'd won the game, and we're back at the hotel and we're eating. We're trying to get back to the room to get our stuff together and get it on the bus. And me and him are walking down the hallway, and he goes, "Man, can you believe this?" And I said, "No, I can't." He goes, "Do you think we'll have anybody up there?" And I'm like, "Yeah, Coach, I think you're going to have plenty of people up there." That's just the way he operates. He's just always operating out of fear and fearful that they won't have an advantage. They won't have fans there and all that stuff. That's what makes you so good.
You know, the path to where you're at right now is really something I think maybe gets overlooked a little bit now that we're at this point. But you go back to the round of 32, and Buffalo was a legitimate team. There's no question. But you beat them by 20. Then Michigan, who Trent and I, watch night in and night out in the Big Ten. We're not watching Big 12. We're watching Big Ten. And this Michigan team is absolutely legit amongst their placing at the top of the Big Ten. You crushed them. By 19, 20 points, whatever it was. Gonzaga, this is one of the heavy heads, one of the one seeds. And, there was some drama at the end, but in the end, you won by six. This is a Texas Tech team that's destroying teams to get to this point.
Yeah, I've won their tournament games by an average of 15 points. The only one that was close was the Gonzaga one. And after seeing all these games up close and from my vantage point, I mean, Gonzaga is the best team that this team had played. I mean, just a nightmare to try to match up with and to play defense against. But Texas Tech started to figure it out. But that Michigan game will be a bit of an afterthought years from now, in my opinion, just because you beat them so badly.
Yes.
And at some point, John Beilein sits back in his chair with about 8 minutes to go. His legs are crossed. His hands are behind his head. He just had no answer. And Texas Tech really got I think them to doubt themselves, and then the three started going up. They're mostly contested, and 0-for-18 until the walk on kid hits one with about 40 seconds to go, when the game was obviously over at that point. They go 1-of-19 from behind the arc, and that's just everybody comes away, and then Buffalo clearly said the same thing. But everybody comes away from playing Texas Tech. We had an off night. We just couldn't get shots to fall. It was just one of those nights, but. Yeah, you're doing it to everybody.
Indeed you are. Chris Level joining us, Texas Tech radio analyst. Well, I want to ask about, I'm not thinking there was disappointment. We saw Duke and Texas Tech earlier this year, and that was really, to me, when the national media and people throughout the Big 12 that didn't really have a gauge on this Texas Tech team, considering what they lost the year before, we knew defense was going to be a calling card because they played really well against Duke. When Duke was picked off by Michigan State in the dramatic fashion that it was there disappointment? And this is going to sound crazy, not getting to see Duke again, or was it a sigh of relief?
I think they were disappointed. I think they wanted them again. Beard sat there in front of those guys after that game in the locker room, and he told them, and I he's had a lot of kind of almost like eye roll moments where I'm like, there's no way. He sits up here, he talks about coaching on a Monday night in April. He talks about winning conference championships. He talks about, winning in Lawrence, Kansas. But all this stuff that's not supposed to happen, and yet all of it's come true. The Monday night part hasn't yet, but he told them after that game in the Garden, we will see these guys again in the Final Four. And Duke was the one that couldn't uphold right. their end of the bargain. I mean, and when we were all sitting there talking about that Saturday after the game, that he had mentioned that, I'm like, he's close to being right. But again, Michigan State knocked them off, and I think you just look at that and say you don't really like necessarily have a sigh of relief in any way. You knew you were gonna be dealing with a tough game on Saturday, no matter who won that game. But yeah, they wanted Duke again. There's no doubt about that, and they would have been more than prepared and ready for it. But Michigan State is no easy task.
That's for sure.
Chris Beard uses Michigan State and Tom Izzo as an example. And he has all year long behind the scenes of what he wants his program to be and how he wants his kids to play. And so I think it'll be fascinating to see kind of a mirror image of what he wants them to be up close and personal on Saturday in the semifinal.
So as we go through here and you look at this matchup with Michigan State, what gives you the most concern when you look at Sparty and what they throw out there? Not just Izzo and obviously – the only of the coaches that has experience here at the Final Four. But man-to-man, how they match up, what causes you maybe a couple sleepless nights before you get to Minneapolis?
Yeah, I think their ability to rebound, you know, and it just goes with the toughness. I mean, they're averaging over about 40 boards a game and, you know, out rebounding teams by about 8 or 9 a game. And that's a problem. I think that, you know, Tariq and North Odiase are going to have to play, you know, two of their best games. You deal with the bulk of Michigan State. And, you know, Michigan State, though, that they, you know, with the loss of Josh Langford earlier in the year, that they're not as deep. He's going with about 7 guys. Is Coach Izzo, and so that you know, it'll be played at a slow pace. It'll be interesting to see how the game is called. How physical do they allow this game to be played? Because either team gets one of their bigs or you know, in foul trouble, then it's going to adjust how the thing is played. But you know, how does Michigan State defend Culver, and how does Texas Tech defend Cassius Winston? I mean, that's the kind of the games within the games. Because if Cassius Winston's allowed to maneuver around and facilitate like he has, 18 assists in the regional combined in the two games for Winston. I mean, if he's allowed to do that, Michigan State will be very, very difficult to beat. But if Culver's allowed to operate and get his shots off and be a little more efficient than he has been, then look out.
Chris, Tariq Owens, I know that, you know, it's hard to pinpoint one play as, you know, the difference in a basketball game, but that block, and you referenced it earlier, people are going to remember that as part of this tournament. That'll be on the One Shining Moment for sure. We can count on seeing that on Monday night. What an unbelievable play, and the wherewithal to find a teammate before his feet hit the ground. Just an amazing, amazing performance.
Beard tells Tariq all the time, he gives him a hard time about something Bill Russell said years and years ago about shot blockers are sometimes very, very selfish, and they want to block it and then throw it, you know, way out of bounds, and you get the ooh and ah from the crowd. And he finally told me, he's like, you finally listened to me on what Bill said all those years about, you know, just block it, and then you can save it. You know, you don't have to, like, you know, throw it into the third row, but that was just elite athleticism and awareness. I mean, it's not necessarily stuff that you coach. Tariq, just very smart right there, and you have to be long and athletic to be able to pull that off. But just an unbelievable play. And then you turn right around, and then they commit the technical foul right there. You know, and they put one of the best free throw shooters in the country on the free throw line, and Davide Moretti. Mm-hmm. And that kind of right there, those couple of plays right there really was what won you the game.
So as you look at Beard and his future, Texas is his alma mater. There's been conversations, I know, about that. But in the here and now, UCLA a concern at all? I know he's got the contract extension. He makes plenty of money. Money's not anything. But long term, how nervous should Texas Tech fans, and how nervous are they about his viability staying in Lubbock?
You know, and you can't talk in absolutes here. I think Chris is very smart from a fit standpoint. He understands what a good fit he is in Lubbock. I mean, his daughters are 2 hours away in Abilene, Texas. They are very important to him, which is exactly why it was a no-brainer for him to leave UNLV and come back. He's going to get talked to about, obviously, extending his contract again and get another raise. I think they just broke ground on the $30 million basketball-only facility that will be ready in about a year that he helped to raise the money for. So he's got a wonderful recruiting class on paper. So there's a lot. It would take a lot to get him away. And then again, he's one of those guys that he's not necessarily motivated by money. It's about fit and style, and he's a blue-collar guy. I mean, that's just how he is. I mean, he's a JUCO guy. I've coached in the ABA. I've coached in McMurray and Angelo State, these schools that people have never heard of. And so that's why, you know, I think, and he's been in Lubbock for so many years, it's just a good fit. And I think Kirby realizes that too. So, you know, they'll talk shortly after this thing is over, but I just don't know what else would, you know, because I think Tech is prepared to really match, you know, from a money standpoint. And so that won't be a reason why he leaves.
That's good news. I hope he stays in the Big 12. I really do. It's better when we have good coaches throughout the Big 12, and he certainly is on that on top of that list. While you're carrying the flag for the Big 12, Chris Level, thank you very much for giving Des Moines a few minutes here today. Enjoy the experience. It's once in a lifetime, perhaps. Thank you, Chris Level. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, fellas. You guys keep hope alive, and hopefully we can keep this thing going.
Fingers crossed, my friend. Thank you, Chris. Talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Good.
All right,
bye-bye. Chris Level, a radio analyst for Texas Tech. You like him on Saturday night, late game? You'll be there?
I'm on Michigan State.
Are you? Numbers what?
little higher than I thought, though. I saw three and a halfs out there. I probably grabbed the points because, again, it's another coin flip game.
Mm-hmm.
And very well could come down to the final possession like we saw literally every game of the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
I think this one, too. So if it's 3.5, yeah, I'll grab those 3.5. I do think Michigan State, though, will win. And I hope Michigan State wins for me.
Oh.
Bracket.
Selfishly.
Selfishly.
Gotcha. I get this part of it. That's why we fill out these brackets. I'm rooting for Texas Tech.
You are.
I am. I want the Big 12 to get to the final. New blood.
Mm-hmm.
Izzo's been there. I have nothing but respect for the program. Love that team. Really do. I mean, how can you not like Winston, right?
He's
just one of those guys. McQuaid seemingly hits. How about the...
Dunking on people?
Dunking on people. And the contorting his body back away from the basket the other day.
We didn't even talk about that yesterday.
We didn't. Goins, how smart he's been.
Yes.
They don't have a bench, Trent. They go... Essentially, they play six guys.
Mm-hmm.
There were seven guys, but the one guy, I can't remember who it was, played 3 minutes. So it's a six-man rotation. They're not deep. Chris's point about how they're going to call it. You know, Michigan State's going to play physical. That's Izzo basketball. Man, I can't wait for this one. I really can. If I could only watch one, this would be the one.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because of Big Ten, Big 12, right?
Yeah, yeah. Proximity and everything else. So we know these teams. We know these teams incredibly well. Do you have a feeling in the first game that we'll see, Auburn against Virginia?
I know that Auburn's guards are unbelievable. Virginia's defense is phenomenal. Two best defensive teams in the tournament, Texas Tech and Virginia.
No doubt.
Here they are.
Yeah.
I guess if I had to, I'm expecting Virginia and Texas Tech to play Monday night.
Virginia, Texas Tech.
That the Virginia story stays alive.
Yep.
Texas Tech, I don't know if this is once in a lifetime for them. I don't. I mean, Kansas is going to be back. You know that.
Mm-hmm. It is Texas Tech.
You know, but Beard's got a great recruiting class.
He does, and he has developed now two guys.
Yes.
Out of the top,
right?
That weren't top 100 players in the first round to lottery picks.
I know it. And kids are going to notice that.
That doesn't happen.
No.
We don't see that happen often in college basketball.
Kids will notice this around the country, Trent Condon. All right, we're going to take a timeout. We're going to pass the puck around with Joe O'Donnell. The Wild begin their final home stretch of the regular season. They've got another week. It's weird. The NHL ends on Sunday. The AHL goes another week past that before they get into their playoffs. But it is what it is. We'll talk hockey with Joe O'Donnell, the voice of the Iowa Wild. He's coming up next. Zuba Mehente in hour number two. And Trent and I are going to take our first stab at the NFL win totals. Not all of them, but we'll throw a couple of them out there that we like, or either we think this team was undervalued or overvalued. We'll do that coming out of the, to start the 11 o'clock hour. We're here until noon. It's Miller and Condon on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460.
Sports radio in Iowa starts and ends right here. This is Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
All right, welcome back. Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO. Miller and Condon here until noon. Joe O'Donnell needs 2 minutes. Trent needs 2 minutes. Only got like 10. So we'll talk 8 when we get him. The Wild do play tonight. We've got the game, correct? We must have it tonight.
Yes, we have the game.
Tucson is in town. We'll play tonight and tomorrow against Tucson.
Are they the Roadrunners?
They are the Roadrunners.
How about
you
that?
Flaunting your American Hockey League
I don't
knowledge.
Know why that stuck it. Isn't it crazy how just some random thing? How would I know that Tucson's the Roadrunners?
Yeah, I don't know how you'd know. I wouldn't have got it. Now, I would have got who their parent club is, as you would, I would assume.
Is it the Coyotes?
It is.
Man, we need them in the playoffs.
Oh, for your bet? Yeah, so we went back. When was that? September, October did you make those plays?
I think it was September. I mean, it was early.
And you asked me to give you a couple of long shots.
Yeah.
And who did I give you? Arizona.
Arizona.
And they've got a chance.
I think it was Vegas to not make the playoffs.
Yeah,
they're going to make it.
Yeah, they're in.
But that was the biggest one, was Phoenix. And then I took a shot on your Winnipeg Jets to win it all.
You did?
Yeah. I did.
Well, I would have
too. I think it was 14-1, something like that.
They are in first place in their division. They're the fourth best team in their division right now.
Yes.
St. Louis Blues
are
the best team in the Central. I think Dallas might be the second best. I think Nashville and the Jets are probably together on that next level. But yeah, I mean, the Jets could get home ice. If they beat the Minnesota Wild tonight, Minnesota's eliminated.
Oh, okay.
Done. Can't make the playoffs. If the Jets win tonight, they're coming off a back-to-backer. They were in Chicago last night. I get nobody cares, but it's hockey season. And it's the Minnesota Wild.
But I think
they should beat Winnipeg tonight. They've had their number all year, so I think they'll stay alive at least for a couple more days before they get eliminated. But Colorado is in. They're going to make it. Colorado's playing well.
It's a good story.
It's a really good story. They're very young, and they've got Ottawa's first pick in a trade, and Ottawa's going to have the first overall pick. The kid they're going to get is American by Amy Hughes. I'm telling you, USA Hockey has closed the gap big time. In fact, they're on even terms.
Wow.
And it pains me to say it. Because that's our sport, damn it. We don't have anything else. Give us hockey. Leave us hockey. Joe O'Donnell momentarily. Again, Tucson tonight, Tucson tomorrow. And then they hit the road before coming home to finish with the weekend series next weekend. So next Friday and Saturday. But it's playoff hunt, no doubt about that. And what looked as though it was a given a couple of weeks ago, it's tightening up in the playoff race. Joe O'Donnell is the voice of the Wild. He joins us. Joe, Trent, Ken, thanks for coming on. Things are tightening up in the Central.
Oh, Kenny. Come on, man. Let's stay positive here.
Well, you're in third place. Right now, you guys would be on the road to begin the playoffs, but you would be in. But the Admirals, the Stars, and even Manitoba has a legitimate chance to get into this thing. A lot of work to be done, Joe.
I know. Six games left. You know, if the Wild can win four, they'll pretty much clinch on their own. They don't need any help. Anything less than that might need some help, depending on how the teams behind them fare. When we talked, you know, a week or 10 days ago and even, you know, 3 weeks ago, it was a much more pretty situation. You know, it was almost a 10-point lead for the last playoff spot, meaning the cushion Iowa had. Now you're looking at a 3-point cushion. So that's a good or a bad weekend with 2 points getting you a win. So we'll see how the Wild handle it. One of the things I was just chatting with head coach Tim Army literally minutes ago, and one of the things he said, Kenny and Trent, is that he wants the team to just reset a little bit, forget about the losing streak, forget about the next game, just focus on tonight, try and have some fun. It's hard when you're not finding success to not get frustrated, to try and stay positive, to try and have some fun out there because you're not getting the bounces. You feel like everything's ending up in the back of your net. So it'll be tough. We'll see how the leadership group of this team handles the adversity, trying to pull some of the younger guys through it right now. But the Wild need this win tonight against the Tucson Roadrunners at 7 o'clock, about as bad as the hockey team could possibly need a win. Now, again, it's not a Game 7. Their season's not over. But they control their own destiny. The only way to keep controlling your own destiny is start to win. And 5 in a row in the loss column has been a tough stretch for this team. They got to get it back tonight.
Joe, help me out here. As I was looking at the standings this morning, why did the teams in the Pacific Division, why have they only played 62, 63 games where most everybody else has played 70?
They're only going to play 68 when the year's over. That entire division plays fewer games. That's something that those NHL teams, you know, Anaheim, San Diego, Edmonton, Bakersfield, Calgary, Stockton, you name it, you know, the NHL teams, when they formed the Pacific Division, they went to the league and said, we don't want to play 76 games. Jeez. We want more practice time for our players. We want less back-to-backs and less three games in 3 days. And somehow they won that argument with the league that, hey, we're going to sort of do our own thing. So that division is an outlier, if you will. They'll play fewer games. They play themselves a ton. And so that's why you'll see that disparity in games played between the Central Division, where the Wild play, and the Pacific Division, where sort of those West Coast teams are based.
I learned something right here, boys. I really did. Thank you for that, Trent. I had no idea, Joe. I mean, you would think that the league would want everybody, look, they're all running for the same prize. You would think they would want them running on the same course.
Are you trying to get me in trouble here?
Well, it is rare. I mean, this is really different.
Listen, to me, it's an absolute
competitive disadvantage for everybody else.
Yes, and then you look at a team like Iowa that has the worst travel in the league because, you know, the shortest bus ride for the Wild's 4.5 hours to Rockford. The longest is 7 hours plus. You find me another team in the league that has bus travel like that. The Wild just came off a West Coast, you know, 2 games in Tucson, 2 in Stockton, where they didn't have a lot of success. It kind of started this funk for them. Those are long travel days. There was 4 games in like 6 days in that span, all on the road, time changes, you know, time zone changes. Then you got to come back and play Grand Rapids after flying, you know, across the country basically all day Monday to play Grand Rapids last Tuesday. So it's tough. I mean, the reality is this is not a fair league. The teams out east are usually in their beds by the end of the night.
Right.
They have a 2-hour bus ride to go from, you know, Wilkes-Barre, Scranton to Lehigh, for example. Iowa has none of that. They get into town 3, 4 in the morning sometimes. They get home at 3:30, 4:30 in the morning. It's not fair, but at the end of the day, they're all fighting for the same Calder Cup, and nobody's going to feel sorry for the Iowa Wild, that's for damn sure.
No, and then you guys are in every single time zone, whereas the teams in the east spend the majority of the time in one time zone, and I don't care what anybody says. Time zone flipping back and forth, changing back and forth, it takes a toll on the body, Joe.
Yep. Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I blogged about it yesterday on our website, is that the last 3 years, including this one, the Wild have hit this sort of weird late March skid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an answer for it, but some of it's got to be just the wear and tear of now you're hitting game 70, and the pressure is on, and the teams are better, meaning, you know, tightening up for playoff season, and the Wild, for whatever reason, have hit a funk the last couple years during this stretch. Now, as Colton Beck told me this morning after he got done warming up here for the game tonight, he said, you know, it's April now. I thought that was a great way to put it. So if the late March struggles have plagued this team for a couple years, for whatever the reason, it's April, and they got a chance to get back in the win column tonight.
The big club, Minnesota, signed a kid by the name of Nico Sturm, who's up for the Hobie Baker, which is in hockey is the Heisman Trophy for you people that don't understand. It's a huge award. Might he, because Minnesota, as you know, Joe, they may be eliminated playoff-wise tonight if the Jets beat them. I don't think that they will, but that potential's out there. What is the potential of Sturm making his way down here for maybe the final week of the regular season and then into the playoffs? Will we see him?
It's a good question. He's not eligible.
Wow.
Guys that are eligible, though, are Luke Cunningham, Jordan Greenway, and Ryan Donato, because at the sort of the deadline that the league has, teams will do paper transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll send down a couple of players to their minor league team, then quickly recall them just so that on paper they were on the Wild roster on the deadline day.
Yep.
And so the three players that would be eligible for the Wild playoff-wise are Greenway, Cunningham, and Donato, and that would be one heck of a boost.
Boy, I'll say.
I mean, you can play all three together on a line. They've been playing together in the NHL for crying out loud during stretches this year. So that would be huge for Iowa. They could be eligible. You know, if Minnesota wraps up, I think, this weekend, that would mean that the Wild could possibly get those three players in time for their final three games. And that those could be crucial games still if the playoffs haven't been clinched yet.
Joe, the parent club up in Minnesota, they're 5 points back of a playoff spot with three games to play. It's going to be incredibly difficult.
Yep.
If this does end in a non-playoff year, how big of a disappointment is that? I know the fan base is huge up there, but expectations coming into the year, is this about where most people expected them?
I think so, actually, because, you know, they changed general managers going into this year. And the ownership group and Craig Leopold, I think, in my opinion, and from the stuff I read, was that, you know, he was okay with Paul Fenton putting his eyes on this team and what they had and making whatever changes he wanted to get better for the long term. I don't think Craig Leopold expected a Stanley Cup this year. Again, I don't want to speak for the owner, but I think when you change GMs and you tell the GM, it's your team now, you put your fingerprints on it, and we started to see that. Paul Fenton gave the team about 40, 50 games and started to make some changes, and the trade deadline came. They made more changes. They tried to get younger. They tried to, you know, get some more salary cap space for the future. So I think what you're seeing now is...